Well, good afternoon, and welcome. A call to order the Senate Committee on Public Employment and Retirement. So, why don't we go ahead and call the rolls?
Pan.
Here.
Pan here. Morrell.
Here.
Morrell here. Leyva. Morlock. Morlock here. Fortuna.
Okay, we have a quorum. Excellent. And I just wanted to welcome and thank everyone for coming to the first committee hearing of this year, and I also want to express my appreciation to my colleagues here for being here on time so we can start promptly. The first item on the agenda is actually adoption of the committee rules for this year. Is there any discussion or questions? Not, I'll entertain a motion. We're picking up committee rules now. Yes. So these are the standard Senate committee rules.
We're good.
Okay. There's a motion? Okay. So I appreciate the motion from the Vice Chair, Senator Morrell. All right. So, Secretary, can you please call the roll?
Pan.
Aye.
Pan, aye. Morrell.
Aye.
Morrell, aye. Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Morlock?
Aye.
Morlock, aye. Fortuna.
Okay, I guess we'll hold the roll open for Fortuna. All right. Okay. Next item actually is SB 28. So Morrell, if you would like to take the gavel, I'll go ahead and present. Actually, you know what? Before we start, Senator Fortuna, we just took up the committee rules, so I held the roll open. Aye. Okay, so we'll close the roll.
Fortuna, aye.
Okay, so that's 5-0. Committee rules are adopted, so therefore we now have the committee rules in place. Thank you. All right, so again, Senator Morrell, thank
Senator
you.
Senator Pam, would you like to present SB 28?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Morrell. Good afternoon. So SB 28, please present SB 28, which approves 6 memoranda of understanding or MOUs negotiated between the administration and 14 of the 21 state employee bargaining units. These MOUs cover approximately 126,000 state employees. The bill also makes necessary statutory changes to implement these agreements. The MOUs provide for a general salary increase ranging from 2 to 3.5% annually over the course of the contracts, provide a number of special salary adjustments based on position classifications intended to address retention and recruitment. The MOUs also require affected employees to contribute to pre-funding retiree health care benefits. Most MOUs also require new employees hired after January 1, 2017, to work longer before being eligible for retiree health and dental coverage, to be subject to the 80-80 formula for calculating the base retiree health premium benefit, and also excludes new employees from any retiree reimbursement of their Medicare Part B premiums. SB 28 is part of the governor's overall goal of getting employer employees to share equally in the cost of setting aside funds today to be able to pay for future retirees' health care. I have with me Danny Brown from Cal HR representing the administration and Margarita Maldonado from SEIU Local 1000 representing approximately 97,000 of the 126,000 employees to answer any questions. Thank you.
Would you like to present? Sure.
Thank you, Dr. Pan. Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. Danny Brown on behalf of Cal HR. Without necessarily repeating Dr. Pan's comments, I just want to emphasize that with the agreements that we reached last year and with these agreements, we now have 100% of our rank and file employees agreeing to pre-fund OPEB. So that was a big win for the administration, the governor, what he was looking for when negotiations started. Also, we have about 96% of all of our new employees will start having to work longer to vest for retiree and dental benefits, and also have to, once they do vest, they will also get about the same amount of money that they would get as an active employee. So the amount of employer contribution has reduced. So I just want to point those out.
Annie, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. I'm Margarita Maldonado, Vice President for Bargaining within SEIU 1000. And thank you, Dr. Pan and the committee. And on behalf of the Service Employees International Union, Local 1000, and 97,000 of our members, we are proud to co-sponsor this Senate Bill 28, which includes a tentative agreement for through Local 1000 and the state. And it encompasses 9 bargaining units, which that covers about 40% of the state employees for the state of California. And we really provide a broad range of jobs and work for Californians and also communities. We're IT analysts, we're librarians, we're teachers, cooks, custodians, nurses, scientific technicians, and social services specialists. And those are just a few of the thousands of classifications that we actually represent. And with the people that we represent, we protect the environment, ensure our roads and bridges are safe. We provide quality medical care and help ensure schools are funded. We oversee 108 community colleges that are educating our next generation of leaders. And after veterans have served our country, we are there to serve our veterans in the different veterans' homes. And so, like all Californians, we believe that all people who work hard for a living should be able to provide for their families. And so some of the things that you've heard already from the tentative agreement were not always easy as we were having the conversations with our members, but I think we were able to see what the investment would look like. And therefore, obviously, we reached a tentative agreement. And I wanted to also say that this tentative agreement also reflects the voices of our members and what kind of struggles they have. And I want to read a quote that we received from one of our members. This contract means I have food at the end of the month, and I can buy healthier food. I'm able to take the kids to the doctor. It restores my dignity in my profession and makes me proud of what I do every day. It means not having to say no to my family for the basic necessities such as shoes and winter clothes. I think that is a very powerful representation of what it means to be able to have a contract that reflects the values of who we are. This contract also has a reduction of mandatory overtime, which we know has been a model that the state has been using in order to staff the medical certain medical positions. And so this will reduce it by one day a month, and eventually by 2019 we'll reduce all mandatory overtime. And that there's a task force in place to ensure that we can have these conversations. And then also the large liability around employee time banks, there is also a provision in there to help reduce that. We know that through workloads and through different staffing models, some employees hadn't been able to use their time, so now there is a provision that will now enable them to have that benefit. And along with the contribution to the post-retirement health benefits, and as you consider and vote on SB 28, I want to make sure that you know it wasn't easy to get to this point. But we were able to get there. It was a long struggle. And we have this mutual agreement. And we really believe that this is going to have a positive impact on the 90-plus thousand members that we represent, our communities, and our families. So thank you, and we appreciate your support for SB 28.
Any questions? Additional support? Sorry about that. It's been a year or a few months. Gotta get warmed up.
Good afternoon, Senators. Kobe Pizzotti with the California Association of Psychiatric Technicians. We are also a co-sponsor of this bill, and we are also in this vehicle. So we do support. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members, Aaron Reed representing CAL FIRE, Local 2881, and we are co-sponsors as well. It was a difficult round of negotiation, taking over a year to get there. Our firefighters receive one-third less pay than local firefighters and work a one-third longer work week, 72-hour work week versus locals' 56-hour work week. So we made some progress, not nearly as much as we hoped for, but we support the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members, Terry Brennan on behalf of SEIU California in support. Mr. Chairman and members, Tim Kremen, International Union, in full support. And that's your bargaining units 12 and 13, and that represents your blue collar in the state workforce. It's Caltrans maintenance workers. It's your stationary engineers. It's your blue collar here at Action in the Capitol. Thank you.
Joshua Golka with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Bargaining Unit 19, here in support.
Mr. Chair, members, Christy Bauma on behalf of the California Professional Firefighters. Local 2881 is one of our large affiliates, and we're pleased to be in support.
Michael Young about the California Labor Federation, also here in support.
Any in opposition? Member questions. Senator Morlock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pan, just a couple quick questions. who does the negotiating for the state with the bargaining units? Is it Mr. Brown?
Perhaps I'll let, there's a team at the represents administration, but I'll let Mr. Brown perhaps answer the details.
Yes, thank you. I do not personally do the negotiations, but a group of labor representatives from at CalHR represents the governor in negotiations with the labor unions.
And so are they management? Are they independent consultants or
no,
are they lawyers?
No, they're state employees. So there's a deputy director of legislation relations that's appointed by the governor, and then there's labor relations officers that work underneath her that are also, I believe, appointed by the governor, but they're all state employees.
And would they be beneficiaries of the contracted or the negotiated contract then?
No, they're all employees at CalHR are excluded from representation.
And then could you explain the $2,500 signing bonus? I think of a signing bonus as something that you get when you start, but this is going to all employees?
This is going to all employees that were employed at the time that the agreement was reached and are still employed at the time that the contract is ratified.
So that's a big number, right?
Correct.
So why are we doing that? Are we catching up for something? Why a signing bonus? Or maybe the title could be different.
It was just part of the negotiations. As you can tell, is anytime these negotiations are going, there's a lot of requests as far as on both sides. Now, we had you have to remember that this contract actually expired on July 1st of 2016, so there's technically no pay raise from that time until the GSI will go into effect on July 1st of 2017. So that could have been something that was negotiated to take into account, you know, the current year's, what may have, could have been or should have been a current year raise, since they did not reach an agreement with the union.
Well, some of these go retroactive to even July of 2016. So
one of them.
So you get a bonus and retroactive.
No, the bonus is only for SEIU, and the retroactive pay raise back to July 1st, 2016 is bargaining unit 18. Okay. And those are the psych techs.
And during this time, you can still get. We would call it, we just have step up in trying to think of the terms we used when I was supervisor, but you'd have 12 steps. You could go get a pay raise. So even throughout the negotiations, you could still be eligible every year for a step up, right?
Well, there are merit raises if you haven't hit the top of your classification. So within a range, there are, you know, there could be, some of the employees could get a merit increase depending on where they were in their pay scale and their classification.
Okay, and then we're asking the employees to pay 50% of the OBEB. Excuse me. Your cold nights here in Sacramento. and I'm still having a lot of trouble with that provision. I think the state should pay for it all, and the employees shouldn't be paying for it. And then we should just reduce the increase in salary by the commensurate amount. So it doesn't cost you anything different, but now we're sort of exasperating the pension plan, and so I'm really concerned about that. So, you know, when you have such a good pension, it's almost difficult to say, should you have raises? I mean, I'm not saying no raises, but we've got to be really judicious to make it all fit, because we've got a budget right now that's already $1.6 billion underfunded. And this is going to generate a lot of additional costs in the future. So I guess you're using some pretty good assumptions that says our economy is going to be doing pretty good for the next few years. I guess there's a question mark there. Because even the Legislative Analyst Office just came out with a report and said, boy, these pay raises are going to make it difficult for the defined benefit pension plans. And I just, do you have any thoughts, any recommendations?
As far as the thoughts, I mean, I think that it, you know, was important for the administration that came out in 2015 budget, where the governor had his four proposals around reducing retiree unfunded liability, and one of them was, you know, to have both the employees pay half of the normal cost. And so I think that's what's reflective in the agreement that we reached with all of the labor unions so far, is that they'd each share in paying down the unfunded liability. Now, I understand your point of the exacerbation of the, by having on pay raises, but I think in, when you're looking at collective bargaining and you're looking at negotiations, it's not an easy one-for-one exchange comparing the OPEB contributions with salary raises. Both sides have their priorities, and so I think it's a complex negotiation where I think the administration and our labor groups reached what we thought was the best way to pre-fund retiree medical.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Leyva.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to touch on what Senator Morlock was raising. And I would just say that these are not highly compensated employees, and maybe the negotiator from SEIU can elaborate on that, but these are not highly compensated folks, and to think that they wouldn't receive a raise so that they could receive a pension is something I hope no one ever thinks about. And then also to your point about the $2,500 raise, I negotiated contracts for over a decade, and sometimes it's a combination of things. Sometimes you get people, the employees get a bonus, and they get hard money increases as well. And that's something that's usually reached between both parties, and usually both parties don't love either one of those. So it's definitely something that is a compromise on both sides. But many people look at it, I think, unjustly, unfairly, and think, oh, you got a raise and you got a bonus. Well, it's a compromise. It's reached between both parties. So I just wanted to comment on that. And I don't know if you want to talk about the compensation that these workers receive.
No, I think that's an excellent point. And as you know, the civil service system is currently under review right now through a civil service initiative. And it's looking at the classifications. It's looking at class specifications that have been outdated for decades. And as those classifications that have been outdated, so has the compensation level. And so I think some of the increases that we have been able to obtain here actually start moving that bar, and allows us to also continue to recruit talent, because that we don't operate in a vacuum. It's important that the state of California is able to recruit the talent necessary at the compensation that really meets what it is the job entails. And we have, through this agreement, we were able to actually cut in half and start moving to a place of ensuring that employees were able to have a livable wage, where that is also something that is equally important to the state of California as what which was done last year. So compensation is not just around the general salary increase. It also helps move the bar in reaching and getting closer to what employees should be compensated for the work that they do provide for the state. So appreciate that opportunity.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I would just like to add a comment. I think, you know, as I listened to the units come to the microphone, it seemed to me like this was a result of a long discussion, long collective bargaining, and I didn't hear lots of excitement right. Because I think this was a case where all sides gave to try to do what's in the best interest of the state and also in the best interest of those folks who are covered by these agreements. So I don't think there was any celebration. I think it was hard negotiating. I think the governor's team, from what I saw and felt and heard, negotiated very tough.
And so I think you see people coming together trying to do what's in the best interest of their employees, but also in the best interest of the state. So I think it represents, you know, a push on everybody, and, you know, which is what you want in a negotiation. You want folks to give but understand the big picture, both for the human side as well as the state side. And I think this is represented here.
Do you have another question?
Yeah, no, just maybe just since we're having a discussion, just to say that I had the privilege of negotiating for 8 years at the County of Orange as a supervisor. We only had 18,000 employees, not 126,000, so maybe one less than a 20%. But in the nomenclature, is there something we can do to help you? Because it's hard to explain to taxpayers that you got a signing bonus. So is there a better term?
I mean, I think it was something that Senator really laid out really beautifully, is that it is a give and take. And it is one of the features of this agreement. Obviously, there were many of us who went beyond the expiration date. And I think this is just that bonus, or that $2,500 is reflective of what the give and take is. And obviously, there are people who would have appreciated having it go retro to 2016. Obviously, that wasn't somewhere where the administration was going with the way that the deal was came together. And I believe that the way we also look at what our responsibility is as a union is that money in turn goes back into our communities, which in turn goes back into California and helps it thrive. I mean, I think it's something that is part of what the process is.
I don't know whether we can modify what's agreed in the bill, but I don't know, maybe we should call it a one-time compensation adjustment. I don't know.
Well, one thing, just a couple of comments on it. Yeah, usually you hear that in professional sports, you get a signing bonus. And so I think your marketing term is probably going to hurt you when that term gets out, you know, because I think the taxpayers are, they want their money spent efficiently and effectively. And when you use terms like that, it's going to be to your detriment, but so be it. But that's not my question. My question is, says, when incorporating general salary increases and special adjustments, employees covered by these MOUs in this bill will receive raises, and I'm not against raises, trust me, from 8%, but check this out, to as high as 26.5%. So that 26.5% does seem pretty, pretty big, especially I was looking on your forecast that you guys, you know, I'm worried about leaving debt to the next generation is my biggest concern. And we are piling up some debt here on CalPERS. And for the last 9 years, you guys, for whatever reason, you always forecast 7.5% return, but you've averaged only about 4.5. And so there are people predicting, even our governor, where we could have another really bad year. And so if we do these raises, we're adding an extra $4.7 billion to the state. So factoring all that in, because there's, I know CalPERS says you're so much in debt. Other studies say CalPERS unfunded liabilities is over $1 trillion. And so walk me through how you do justify that 28% in an economy that possibly could go a direction since our revenues have slowed up from month to month. And then the last thing is your projections have usually been off. So, and then lastly, if you're catching all that, focus on that 28.5% raise, if you would.
Well, and I apologize, I don't know off the top of my head which group is receiving the 28% raises, but I think, and I don't know if that's cumulative of the, both the, I don't know if that's cumulative of the general salary increases plus the SSAs, but I think that what was, you know, again, the SSAs is typically an agreement. It's looking at what the administrations, our departments, their priorities, what the priorities of the labor groups are, and they're typically targeting those positions that have been hard to recruit and retain. So either we're just having trouble recruiting people, or we're recruiting them in and then we're losing them after we train them. There's also looking at some positions where we're looking at equity, making sure that they're being paid equitably with other like classifications. So there's usually a good reason why those are being paid out, and I think this, when you're looking at those special salary adjustments, they are typically a smaller portion of the entire group. I think overall, of the 126,000 individuals covered by this contract, you know, less than 20% are receiving special salary adjustments. Some of those are receiving one, some are receiving multiple special salary adjustments. So I think that's really the justification. And then as far as the CalPERS piece of it is, I mean, it's really difficult to know how that is really going to be played out in the, obviously in the future. I think CalPERS takes into account when they're doing their assumptions, a certain level of salary increases, and individual salary increases can range anywhere from 3 to 7% per year. So it's not like, so there's a lot of things that could impact CalPERS' unfunded liability. Individual salary increases are probably a small one in the big picture, but it's it would not be, it is very possible over the next couple of years you could see salary losses at CalPERS due to these raises, but over time they should even out. And I think if you look back in time over the last 5 years and the pay increases or lack of pay increases, it could be a wash. So I think that, not to take anything away from in possible impact of CalPERS, I think it's, you know, we'll have to see how that plays out, and we'll, as they do their valuations over the next couple of years, we'll have an idea of.
And 9 years, they've been off their projections by 3 points. I just curious, and this kind of, you don't even have to answer it, but every year they project 7.5%. That's just economic right. Forecasters usually don't do that. They really try to hit the market, and when you're off that many years in a row, I don't know if you guys switch these guys out every few years if they continue to make mistakes, but if you're using the same people, not sure how you do that, but that's just, so next year they're going to use 7.5. Then I mean, where do they come up with it? It's an interesting number for me, to be honest with you.
Although I think I do just want to be clear that actually very recently CalPERS did make a downward adjustment in the discount rate for the expected returns. So they are making adjustments, and CalSTRS has as well, recently down to 7%.
Any other questions from the Senator Leyva?
Just a quick one. Senator Morrell, the increase that you were talking about, was that a per-year increase, or was that over the life of the contract?
Life of the contract.
Okay, that's what I thought, because sometimes you might get a 7% raise 1 year, 7% the next year. So I just wanted to clarify that for the record, that that was not a 26 or 28% increase for 1 year. And the actual actuarial return rate of 7.5%, that's kind of a generally accepted accounting rule for pension funds. And if you want that rate to go down, you have to usually buy that rate down, and it's incredibly expensive. But to your point, it's also good to make sure you're hitting those marks. But it's very tricky.
Apparently it is. Any other questions you want to close?
Thank you, Senator Morrell. Yes, I would. So again, I appreciate the discussion. A couple points I do want to make. So first of all, and I appreciate Senator Morlock bringing up the issue of saying, well, why not have the state simply just put money into retiree health instead of increasing the salaries and then having the state employees put in a share of that, right? And you're saying it might drive up our CalPERS costs, et cetera. And I guess, and again, I'm not the administration, so, but, and it's negotiated between the administration and the unions. One of the things that actually that we should think about is that it makes explicit the retiree health costs to the employees. So we could just have the state put the money away into a separate pot and not ask the employees to actually explicitly put a share. But I think that by making it explicit, if there are future adjustments that need to be made to ensure that we have sufficient funds to cover retiree health on an, instead of doing it on a year-by-year basis, to do it, you know, as an actuarial basis, that actually it makes it it provides an additional point. I'm sure the labor union is probably not like, oh yeah, that's a great idea, but it actually creates an additional point of discussion about, okay, well, maybe if we're falling behind on our savings for retiree health, you need to put a little more in, or if we're able to keep up. So because it's now an explicit portion that they're actually contributing to versus the state just simply putting into a pot and never seeing it. The other point, and I know it's been mentioned, is that, you know, CalPERS does, in their actuary projections, anticipate that state employees, like employees everywhere, in order if you want to keep keep and recruit and get employees, you have to give them at least some salary increases, at least maintain cost of living. And we're not talking about, in terms of the generally salary increases, of a particularly, you know, high increase. I mean, we're talking at 2-3.5%. So, I mean, that's something that I know in my discussions with CalPERS and their folks that they anticipate that there will be salary increases and work that into their projections. So, you know, I think this is the result. These MOUs are a result of a give and take from both sides. We know how I think our governor is pretty well known for his, he's very careful about our money and very careful about looking at the things in the future. I think that the employees had to give and the administration as well, and really it landed in a place that that the governor believed is fiscally prudent, not only for now, but also looking into the future. So I appreciate all the work that has been put into these MOUs. I think in the end, it's really the people of California that come out that win, and I urge an aye vote. Thank you very much.
Ready, Secretary, you want to call the roll?
The motion is do pass and re-refer to Budget and Fiscal Review Committee. Pan.
Aye.
Pan, aye. Morrell.
No. No.
Morrell, no. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Morlock. Morlock, no. Portantino?
Aye.
Portantino, aye.
Okay, are we going to hold it over or open where everybody's here? Okay. Moved. Okay, approved. Good job, Dr. Pan. You got one more?
Mm-hmm. One more.
You only get one, I thought.
So actually, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm presenting SB 48 on behalf of the Committee on Budget and Fiscal Review, which is there. It's actually the committee bill. So SB 48 makes statutory changes to future retiree health and dental benefits of new employees in bargaining units 1, 3, 4, 11, 14, 15, 17, 20, and 21. The changes are necessary as part of the implementation of the overall agreement between the administration and state employees to address the unfunded liability for retiree health benefits. The bill requires new employees in affected bargaining units hired after January 1st, 2017 to work longer before being eligible for retiree health and dental coverage, to be subject to the 80-80 formula for calculating the base retiree health premium benefit, and also excludes new employees from any retiree reimbursement of their Medicare Part B premiums. Along with SB 28, SB 48 is part of the governor's overall goal of getting employer employees to share equally in the cost of setting aside funds today to be able to pay down for future retirees' health care. I also have with me again Mr. Danny Brown from Cal HR representing the administration, and I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Would you like to testify?
Sure. Danny Brown, Cal HR, and the administration just views SB 48 as a companion to SB 28, and just it would bring new employees hired under SEIU under the governor's health care provisions that I discussed earlier that would require a longer vesting schedule and reduce the employer contributions at retirement. And with that, I ask for your aye vote.
Any other witnesses in support? Any in opposition? Any questions from the members?
We had a lot of fun at the County of Orange renegotiating our retiree medical. So I want to affirm you in at least making some moves on this front at the state. But I don't think it's enough. And I'm happy to sit down with you, Mr. Brown, and show you what we did. We reduced our unfunded liability by 71% by working with all the bargaining units. And if we did that here in the state of California, you'd reduce your unfunded liability by $50 billion. So I'm having trouble with this. It's like I want to vote for it, but it's just not enough for me. I think it really should be across the board with a few more other things that should be done. So I just wanted to explain my vote. Thank you.
Any other? Senator Leyva.
I just wanted to say that I think this was a good compromise, but also remind folks that people who live in rural areas, their retiree health and welfare, they're out of network, so they sometimes pay $400 to $700 a month for their health care coverage, when folks who live in a metropolitan area might pay $100. So just want to keep working towards making sure things are more equitable for all retirees. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Leyva, for making that very important point, and I'm proud to have previously tried to carry legislation to address it, and it's something we need to continue to work on. Thank you.
Members, any other questions? What's that? Would you like to close, or? Okay, then.
Respectfully, yes, for an aye vote.
Motion.
Secretary.
Call the roll.
The motion is do pass and be referred to Budget and Fiscal Review Committee. Pan.
Aye.
Pan, aye. Morrell?
Aye.
Morrell, aye. Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Morlock?
No.
Morlock, no. Portantino?
Aye.
Portantino, aye. The bill is out. 4-1.
I just got to say that the bill's out.
The bill is out.
All right. Well, thank you, Senator Morrell, for chairing this hearing. I think seeing no other business, and we've closed the roll on both items, this hearing is now adjourned.